So in the first verse, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos. Now Amos was thought by some to be a brother or a close kin to Uzziah. And if this be true, then it makes Isaiah kin to royalty. And it is thought by many that he was a figure very familiar with royalty and with the more highly educated class of people. And the style of Isaiah seems to be a higher style than some of the other prophets. Some think that this is because of his education, whereas it's very easy, though, for us to explain it by the fact that this is just the way God wanted him to produce his prophecy. But he was the son of Amos. Now, this is not Amos, although he did live along about the same time that Amos lived. This is not Amos. Which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So he spells out what his prophecy is about and the time about which it's given. It is about Judah and Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is a very dear and close city to Isaiah because it, of course, was the center of the Hebrew religion. It's where the temple was located. It's where the seat of power is located for this country and originally for all of Palestine and before the divided kingdom. And so much of his prophecy is going to be relating to Jerusalem, and certainly it'll be relating to Judah. So he says, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Now, beginning in the second verse, he opens his prophecy. He opens the pages of God's revelation to the world about this nation Judah. And so it says, "Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me." Now we have pictured in the Bible several times here God calling a judgment as though he's just having a public trial and calling the earth and the heavens and the hills to listen to what he has to say. This is open to the world now. In Psalms 50, verses 4 through 7, "He shall call to the heavens from above and to the earth that he may judge his people. Gather my saints together unto me, those that have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. And the heavens shall declare his righteousness, for God is judge himself. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, and I will testify against thee. I am God, even thy God." We have this again in Micah. I'd like to turn and read that just a moment. Micah 6, verses 1 and 2. "Hear ye now what the Lord saith. Arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, the Lord's controversy, and ye strong foundations of the earth, for the Lord hath a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel." So what he's saying here to these people, he doesn't intend for it just to be a little thing that's done off in a corner somewhere for nobody to know about it. He's saying this for the world to hear. He's bringing this trial. He's bringing this this judgment upon Israel in the front of all the world. In Deuteronomy 32, verses 1, "Give ear, O ye heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth." Then he goes on to say in that passage, "My doctrine shall drop as the rain. My speech shall distill as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass. Because I will publish the name of the Lord, ascribe ye greatness unto our God." So his doctrine is for all. It's for the world, for the strong, for the weak, for the little tender grass, and for the giant tree. And so he speaks here for the world to hear. And again, one more in Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. So here again, he calls heaven and earth to record. This is Moses speaking on this occasion. Now, what is he saying about this people? He says, I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. Now, there are many families that know from firsthand experience just how maybe the Lord could feel about this. I have nourished and brought up children. But what's happened in the nourishing and the bringing up of these children? They have rebelled and against me. Now, we know that one of the great sins and the great plagues of our age, and quite possibly of all ages, is this little item known as rebellion. To rebel means to have a deep resentment for and an open opposition to authority. So you can rebel against your parents, you can rebel against your government and the laws of the land, you can rebel against God and the laws of spirituality. Rebellion. Well, that's what had happened here in the case of Judah. I brought up children, he says, and they rebelled against me. And the Lord's declaring this to the world to hear. Look what's happened. My family, those that would be the closest to me, those that are counted as my children, I brought them up, and they rebelled against me. And then he gives a very easily understood comparison. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know, my people doth not consider. He takes here two of the dumbest animals, animals that are known as beasts of the field, the ox and the ass, animals that you don't ever have much of a show of training. Nobody takes an ox out here and puts him through a lot of tricks. He's just not that kind of an animal. But he says that the ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib. While you go out here to take care of your cows and go to feed them, they know who you are. You're not scaring them when you're out there putting out hay for them, whatever you're going to have, you're going to feed them. They know who you are. They recognize what you're doing for them. And you're doing it for your benefit as much as you are for their benefit, but that doesn't matter. These old oxen might have been worked hard all day, but they still knew the owner. And this ass, he knew the master's crib. He knew where the home was. He knew where the barn was. But he says, but Israel does not know. My people does not consider. In Jeremiah 8, we have a very similar allusion given here. Jeremiah 8, verse 7. Yea, the stork in the heaven knoweth her appointed times, and the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming, but my people know not the judgment of the Lord. Comparing them with birds of the air, how that they know the heavens and they know the seasons and the times. We marvel that birds are able to migrate and to find where home is and to know what the seasons are, know whenever it's fixing to turn into winter, and they can fly south and so on. The birds know all of this. But he says, my people, they know not the judgment of the Lord. Now, just as it's important for those animals, those wild birds, to be able to know what the seasons and the times are, to know what the Lord wants them to do and not to do, that's vital for their very existence. Also, it's equally vital for man to know the judgments of the Lord. Our instincts, if you please, should be so attuned to what the Lord wants, what the Lord's judgments and desires are, that we would do them just like a wild beast would do those things that are instinctive to them. But the Lord can see how all these other animals go by their instincts, and his people don't even know his judgments. his children that he brought up rebelled against him. A similar thing is here in Hosea chapter 11, verse 4. I drew them with the cords of a man, with bands of love, and I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws, and I laid up meat unto them. Now, they that take off the yoke would be like the one who takes the yoke off of the oxen and lays it up on the jaws so that they can then rest from their burden. He laid out meat to them. He drew them with cords of love. And so this shows how God treats his people and how close a relationship he tries to have with them, and how that we then should respond at least as much as the wild animals do. But he says, Israel doth not know. My people doth not consider. Now, Israel doth not know. This would show very strongly that the crowning problem of all ages is ignorance. It's not that the bulk of mankind turns against God in face of all of the knowledge and understanding and ability to serve him, but they just decide they don't want to. It's because that they refuse to know. And of course, as we've said many, many times before, when you do not know, you cannot serve him. That's a necessary prerequisite. You must have some knowledge. Without it, you can't serve him. That was Israel's trouble. That was Judah's trouble. Didn't know. Ignorant. So he says, my people does not know. My people doth not consider. Now, to consider means to stop and to contemplate, to think about, to weigh the pros and cons of. His people didn't even do that. And you know, today, even though we are, or the bulk of mankind is in a state of vast ignorance, if they'd just stop and consider the consequences of any act, of doing it or not doing it. Just from a philosophical viewpoint, most all of the things that God wants, man could see that it's best for him. You know, it's easy for man to see that it's best that he not be addicted to a drug, and that he not be an alcoholic, and that he not be a brawler and somebody who breaks the laws of the land, that he not use foul language, that he be a good neighbor, that he show love to each other. Even the heathens are able to figure this out. Just stop and consider. But yet, whenever we start getting a little bit of knowledge, and then we consider in the face of the knowledge that we have, we even more have demonstrated to us the validity of God's will. So in verse 4, ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. Now, this is a description here of the depravity, of the absolute turning away that this people had against God. He calls them a sinful nation. Now, let's not forget that Israel was a nation, and Judah was a nation. I keep saying Israel. We're talking about here primarily Judah, though. They originally were one nation before they divided. They were a nation, and God dealt with them as a nation. Now, today, we also are a nation. But the difference is, we are a spiritual nation, the kingdom of heaven. We are not a temporal, physical, earthly kingdom as Judah was. That is, we don't have any boundaries in this earth. We don't have any king upon this earth who has an earthly throne or an earthly center. We do not have recognition in this earth by other kingdoms as being a nation, because we're not of this world, really. It's a kingdom that includes the world, but it's not exclusively of the world, as was the nation Judah. So he says, a sinful nation. But we today can become a sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers. That is, everything that we do springs up as evil. We're planting evil every place we go. Children that are corruptors, and this word corruptors has been translated as estranged. We become strange to God. We become enemies of God. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backwards. And not only did they forsake Him, but they provoked Him to anger. Now, to stop and consider for a moment the consequences of incurring the anger of God. Of all of the beings that we can even imagine, to have God angry with us would be a most unenviable position to be in. It'd be a very serious disadvantage, to say the least, to have God angry with us. Well, now, God is not getting angry with the those who've never been His children, with those who've never known Him. Here, He's getting angry with those who are His nation, His children. And then He says, they are gone away backwards. This has been translated as, they have turned their backs upon Him. Here's God, who's relating to the people, who's trying to give and trying to assist them in whatever way He can, and the person just turns his back on Him. The nation turns his back on Him. And that's what we do today. Whenever His Word is available, it's being freely taught, it can be applied as it should be, and we turn our back on it. We just close up our Bible. We have something better to do, something we'd rather do. We openly and willfully and flagrantly neglect. And you know, this is getting right into that sin we're talking about in the book of Hebrews, that presumptuous sin, that sin of one who sins willfully after that he's had the forgiveness of his sins. This is what we're talking about. Verse 5, why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. Now, why should you be stricken anymore? This is looked upon several ways. One is, from the gist of the context here is, there's not any use to hit you anymore. There's no use to beat you or to flog you or to strike you again, because you will revolt more and more. Your whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. It's as though it does no good to chastise or to punish or to show you that this is going to bring about my wrath, because your leaders, your head, your heart, that very vital element that's required in order for you to be of service to me, that's what's sick. That's what is faint. And so to spend any more time with chastisement and correction is futile. And certainly I believe that does no damage to the context to interpret it that way. But another interpretation here is, why should you be stricken anymore? Some of the translators word that so that it goes something like this. There's not any place left to strike you. You've been flogged all over. There is no place that there's not already a stripe upon you from prior punishments. There's no place left to strike. And from the reading of the next verse, that very likely could be what he says here, or means here, because in the next verse he says, from the sole of the foot, even under the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. They're just full of sores. Now, whether these sores are a result of their sin, their degradation, their turning upon, their rebellion against God, or whether these sores are a result of the stripes that He's had to inflict upon them as a result of their sins, really doesn't make a lot of difference. But what He's saying is that there is no soundness in you, from your sole of your foot to your head. And these sores are of such a nature that they're putrefying, and they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. I'm told that the practitioners of the day in which Isaiah lived used a lot of ointment and used a lot of oils in the healing of sores to soften the wound and to improve the healing atmosphere of it. And a gaping wound, they would take and bind it up, just kind of pull it together. And even today we use in certain instances tape that where we can tape a laceration together, and it saves having to sew it together. And so you can do a whole lot towards improving the healing of a sore just by binding it together. But Israel was in such a bad condition that they had these sores that hadn't even had that kind of a treatment given to them. And this reminds us of the teaching in Revelation 3 whenever the Lord's talking to the church at Laodicea, beginning with verse 16, Revelation 3, verse 16. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see. So this is the counsel of the Lord given to a New Testament church, but it so closely parallels his description of Judah. Then in verse 7, your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire, your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it's desolate as overthrown by strangers. Now here he's describing this country. It's desolate. The cities are burned with fire. Strangers are devouring your land right in your presence. It's desolate. It's